Samuel. Continue our study in 2 Samuel. And one of the things that I want to do is deal with the Psalms, and because David wrote about half the Psalms, so I want to go ahead and start with a Psalm this morning. And it's Psalm 24. Psalm 24. All right, so let's look at Psalm 24. It's a marvelous psalm, and there are some things in it that I want to emphasize. The earth is Jehovah's, and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. For he hath founded it upon the seas, and established it upon the floods. And then he asked the question, who shall ascend into the hill of Jehovah? And who shall stand in his holy place? Then he gives the answer. He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul unto falsehood, and hath not sworn deceitfully, he shall receive a blessing from Jehovah, and righteousness from the God of his salvation. This is the generation of him that seek him, that seek thy face, even Jacob. Now, the next paragraph, I've seen that quoted. I remember Alexander Campbell would really love that passage, and I love it too. Lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be lifted up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory will come in. Who is the King of glory? Jehovah, strong and mighty. Jehovah, mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O ye gates. Yea, lift them up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory will come in. Who is this King of glory? Jehovah of hosts. He is King of glory. Isn't that a magnificent psalm? One of the many magnificent psalms. I want to read a comment about this psalm in the book that we're using, which is my book, so it's all right for me to read it. This psalm 24 refers either to the bringing of the ark into Jerusalem on this occasion when David moved the ark into Jerusalem, 2 Samuel 6, or it's being brought back to Zion after accompanying the army to battle. Seemingly, it was occasionally done either way. Either way, the psalm may have been used regularly on occasions when the ark was taken out with the army and then returned to the city in victory. It is a glorious song and described the King of glory entering Zion. We place it here. Psalm 101 may also fit this time, but the evidence is scant and indecisive. So I want to mention another thing or two here in connection with the book, and give a little attention to the idea of David organizing the Levites. David organizing the Levites. Now, later on, he did a lot more organizing of the Levites, but he did some at this time. So this is in 1 Chronicles 16, 37 through 42. At this time, David organized the Levites into groups and assigned them to certain tasks. Some were singers, some were doorkeepers, guards. The arrangements of David at this time reflect the presence of the ark in Jerusalem, while the tabernacle, this is a kind of an interesting thing, the tabernacle of the Lord was in Gibeon. So the tabernacle was in Gibeon, whereas the Ark of the Covenant was brought to Jerusalem. There will be further organization of the Levites late in David's reign as he prepares the way for Solomon to build the temple. And I want to go ahead and read a little bit further. Though the Ark of the Covenant was now in a special tent in Jerusalem that David had prepared for it, the tabernacle of the altar of burnt offering was at Gibeon. So it's an interesting thing. The two things were separated. The tabernacle was at Gibeon, and the Ark of the Covenant was in Jerusalem. So Gibeon was where all the sacrifices were offered. So that is also where the priest presided. And in this passage, Zadok and his relatives are specified as priests who offered the regular sacrifices there. So that was at Gibeon. 1 Chronicles 15:11. As the Levites were being prepared to move the ark into the city, Zadok and Abiathar both are listed as priests. We will discuss their roles more later, but it seems these two men shared in the duties of the high priest. They shared the high priestly role, apparently. And remember that Abiathar has been with David ever since Doeg killed the priest of Nob at Saul's command. 1 Samuel 22, verses 20 through 23. Zadok, we're not exactly clear on that, the time. He must have begun as priest under Saul at the same time. Watch for the work of these two priests under David. And there are some further notes that I think we need to consider here. It is on this occasion that we meet the chiefs of the singers. There were three. Asaph was appointed as the leader of the Levite singers in Jerusalem, where the ark was. Two others, Heman and Jeduthun, who is also called Ethan, served with Zadok and his relatives. See that? They were separated. So they served with Zadok and his relatives at Gibeon, where the tabernacle was located. Asaph is the best known of these singers because 12 of the psalms are attributed to him, Psalm 50 and Psalm 73 through 83. Then 88 is attributed to Heman and 89 to Ethan. Though in the titles of the psalms they are called Heman the Ezrahite and Ethan the Ezrahite, they were probably not the same men. They were probably the same as the well-known singers. So there is an appendix in this book. So if you want to look, you can get more information about that. I'm now going to go to the page 61, and I'm going to kind of go to the Bible here. David offers to build God a house. So that's what we're going to look at. So, all right. So let me go back now to the passage here. 2 Samuel. All right. So in 2 Samuel, I want to give a number of passages. I want you to understand several passages that we will look at. David talked with Nathan. And he said, "See, now I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of God dwelleth within curtains." And Nathan said, "Yeah, do all that is within thy heart," because he thought that would be good. The Lord is with thee. However, the Lord said no, and so he contravened the word of Nathan. "Go and tell my servant David, thus saith the Lord, shall you build me a house for me to dwell in? For I have not dwelt in a house since the day that I brought up the children of Israel out of Egypt, even to this day." So God is saying, I've never dwelt. So in other words, you don't have to worry about feeling guilty and feeling that you're not being respectful of me enough. God says, I haven't done that. I have walked in a tent and in a tabernacle. "In all places wherein I walked with the children of Israel, did I speak word with any of the tribes of Israel, whom I commanded to be shepherd of my people Israel, saying, why have you not built me a house of cedar?" So he says, don't worry about that. Don't think about that. So, I want to begin the passage now in verse 11. No, I'm sorry. In verse 11. and as from the day that I commanded judges over my people Israel. And I will cause thee to rest from all thine enemies. Moreover, now this is the proper quotation where you start. Moreover, the Lord telleth thee that the Lord will build you a house, and when your days are fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up thy seed after thee that shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he shall be my son. If he commit iniquity, I will chasten him with a rod of men and with the stripes of the children of men. But my love and kindness shall not depart from him, as I took it from Saul, whom I put away before thee. And thy house and thy kingdom shall be made sure forever before thee. Thy throne shall be established forever, according to all these words and according to all this vision, so did Nathan speak to David. Now, I want you to look at 1 Chronicles 17. I want to deal with several passages that deal with the same problem, promise. All right, 1 Chronicles 17. And it's kind of repeated in a way, so I won't read it all. Beginning in verse 7, Now therefore you shall say to my servant David, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I took thee from the sheep cote, from following the sheep, that thou shouldest be prince over my people Israel. And I've been with thee whithersoever thou hast gone, and cut off all thine enemies before thee, and so on. And down in verse, the last part of verse 10, and moreover, I tell thee that the Lord will build thee a house. So you see, it's virtually the same as 2 Samuel. It shall come to pass when your days are fulfilled that you may go to be with your fathers, I will set up your seed after you. So it's basically the same thing. So then another one I want to look at. But I'm going to go back for a moment to 2 Samuel 7, and I want to read a thing or two there. Back in 2 Samuel 7. And I want you to consider this. Back in verse 12, 2 Samuel 7 and verse 12, When thy days are fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up your kingdom after you, and so on. And in verse 13, Your successor will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he shall be my son. Now, I want to ask you something. Consider who this is talking about. Okay? Is it Solomon? Well, don't make up your mind. Look at this. In verse 14, if he commit iniquity, therefore, who is he not talking about? Christ. Because what about Christ? He's not going to commit iniquity. He's not going to commit iniquity. So, but hang on, because we'll deal with everything. All right, so now then, I want to turn to 89, Psalm 89. And this is very, very important. You need to go to all these passages to understand. All right, so in Psalm 89, notice, all right, Mike, over here, look at the title of that. What is the title of that?
Contemplation of
Jesus. All right. Now, I know you're going to turn. I want you to turn to a lot of passages. I want you to turn to 1 Chronicles 2 and verse 5. So, Donald, can you get that First Chronicles 2 and verse 5 and read that. That's all right. Go ahead.
The sons of Zerah and Zimri, Ethan, Heman, Chokol, and Dara, five of them in all. The sons of Camri, and Ashar, the troubler of Israel, who transgressed in the accursed way.
Okay, that's enough. Did you notice that the name of Ethan there is or high? All right. Look in 1 Kings 4 and verse 31. Mike, can you do that? 1 Kings 4 and verse 31. All right, now listen. Do you see Ethan there? All right. And what's he called? Ethan the what? That's right. So this would place him in the time of whom? Because this is written in Solomon's day. So he lived to see Solomon. Okay? So that's interesting. Okay, so think about this now. All right. Coming back to you, Mike. Read the first two verses there in Psalm 89.
I will sing of the mercies of the Lord forever. With my mouth I will make known your faithfulness to all generations. For I have said, mercy shall be built up forever. Your faithfulness you shall establish in the very heavens.
Okay. Donald, I want you to read it a little bit more. In 89, read verses 3 and 4.
I made a covenant with my chosen. I have sworn to my servant David, your seed I will establish forever, and build up your throne all generations.
Okay. Now remember, who wrote this? Ethan the Israelite, who was contemporary with Solomon. Okay. Now as we read this, oh, it's such a good psalm. It's a long psalm, and I'm not going to read the entire thing, but I do want. Do want to notice several things within this psalm. Alright, so let's go on down in this psalm in verse beginning in verse 19. And we really need to, alright, let's go 19. Really? Man, we have a long reading there. Go ahead and read several verses there.
And you spoke in a vision to your Holy One and said, I have given help to one who is mighty. I have exalted one chosen from the people. I have found my servant David. With my holy oil I anointed him. With whom my hand shall be established. Also my arm shall strengthen him. The enemy shall not outwit him, nor the son of wickedness.
Okay, now let's go back for a moment. As he talks about this, like going back to verse 30. Just read that. Read those few verses, 30 through 33.
I will punish their transgression with the rod, and their iniquity with stripes. Nevertheless, my loving kindness I will not utterly take from him, nor allow my faithfulness to fail.
So, what we have here is the seed of David. The seed of David is not just one person. The seed of David begins with Solomon, and it culminates in guess who? Christ. So that's the reason why, as you look at this, what does it say in verse 30?
If his sons take my law,
so there's the possibility that some of David's descendants are not going to keep his law. You see that? So that's a very interesting thing. And I got some more that I want to say about that. All right? Now, go on to... All right, let's see. All right, let me see. Make sure I get what I want here. All right. Now, again in verse 49. You want to read that? Okay? Yeah. That's verse 49 in Psalm 89.
Lord, where are your former loving kindness, which you swore to David in your truth? Remember, Lord, the reproach of your servant. Now I bear in my bosom the reproach of all of your people. With which your enemies have reproached, O Lord, with which they have reproached the footsteps of your anointed.
All right, now consider the verse 49 in the whole context of this psalm. Lord, where are thy former loving kindnesses? What's happened? You see, something has happened. This is a very different tone to the most of the psalm. Do you realize that since he was contemporary with Solomon, it was entirely possible that he lived to see the split of the kingdom. And I think that's what happened. I think he lived to see the split of the kingdom, the divided kingdom. Okay? And so, look at then, where are your former loving kindnesses? You swear to David in your faithfulness. Remember, Lord, the reproach of your servants. How do I bear in my bosom the reproach of all the mighty peoples, wherewith thine enemies have reproached thee, O Lord, wherewith they have reproached the footsteps of thine anointed. So there's a very different tone here. Okay. Let me read something else now. All right. Now this is on page 63. I have to get it out of here. All right. Here we go. Some notes that I want to read from the book here. At in the middle of page 63, God promised to establish, in fact, there are three things I want to point out. Look back on page 62. There are three things. If we analyze this promise that God made to David, let us break it down into its various components. So that's, hey, are you about to ring the bell? Good. Good. I just wanted to know. Man, I'm not ready yet. So 2 Samuel and its parallel passages, a passage in 1 Chronicles 17, becomes an important link in your understanding of the development of the scheme of redemption. Think of the significance of the passage and learn its location well so so you can call it to mind readily. As we analyze this promise that God has made to David, let us break it down into its various components. So I want to do that. Now on page 62, in italics there, in bold print, the first one is, David's son will build a house for Jehovah. Okay? David's house, David's son will build a house for Jehovah. Now on page 63, we have the second one. God promised to establish David's family as the ruling dynasty. Ruling dynasty. So this promise to David began to be fulfilled in the reign of his son, son Solomon. It is obvious from such passages as 1 Chronicles 22, 6 through 11 and 28, 2 through 10 that David himself applied these promises. He applied this promise to Solomon. And later Solomon quoted the promise, applying it to himself. So it was his view that it was applying to him. It was David's view that it applied to him, and so on. All right, let me go ahead and point out the third thing. Now on page 64, we have the third principle, and that is God will establish David's house, his kingdom, and his throne forever. So those are the three things. David's son will build a house. God promised to establish David's family. Somebody made a noise. So I think the devil is trying to get involved in this thing. David's son will build a house for Jehovah. God promised to establish David's family as a ruling dynasty. God will establish David's house, his kingdom, and his throne forever. Those are the three principles that must be reconciled and dealt with. So, I really wish you would read all of this. I think it would be very, very good. I think you really need to do it. On page 63, this promise to David began to be fulfilled in the reign of his son Solomon. So I think I've already... All right. When Jacob, the grandson of Abraham, was nearing his death, he called his 12 sons before him and gave to each of them a blessing. To Judah he said, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the peoples be." That is, the sign of rulership was to be in the house of Judah until Christ came. Many years passed from the time of thy prophecy before a king was anointed in Israel. The first king, Saul, was from the tribe of Benjamin instead of Judah. His family could have been established as a family that would rule forever in Israel if Saul had been faithful. What you see here is a blending of the foreknowledge of God. And it just moves us to admire and worship God, who was capable of doing these things. But Saul failed to please God, and his kingdom was rejected. David chose God. God chose David, a man after his own heart, from the tribe of Judah. Now God has promised to establish David's throne forever. In 2 Samuel 7, 1 Chronicles 17, Psalm 89, thus fulfilling the promise to Judah. Now before we get through with this, there's another thing. How much there more is there? Well, a lot, because a great deal of the Bible hinges on this. So I want you to turn now to another psalm. And this is going to be related. This is Psalm 132. 132. So in my Bible, I have already written here 1 Chronicles 17, 2 Samuel 7, and now Psalm 89. And Psalm 89. Now this is Psalm 132. All right? So, Jeff, can you read for me in Psalm 132? There's not a long psalm, but I think we'll go ahead and read the whole psalm. if you will. Psalm 132. Now listen carefully and look at how it relates to David. Now, this psalm, Peter quotes from this particular psalm in relating what he says about David in Psalm 2, in Acts 2. So, do you see how much of the Bible is wrapped up in this? And why is that? What does this concern? It concerns Christ. And so Peter applies it to Christ. He applies so much of this to Christ. And we see not just Acts 2, but we say the whole Bible is built around this idea of a promise to God that he's going to exalt David, and he's going to exalt whom? Particularly, Jesus. Jesus is the seed of David. So it's a marvelous thing, and I hope you are impressed with all of this information. This is, in a way, the heart of the Bible. It is the heart of the Bible, the Psalms and everything we pull together. Very, very, very important. So I hope you grasp this, and I hope you need to meditate on it. So, all right, let me go back here and notice a thing or two. Yeah, I don't know whether I need to. You read Psalm 132, so we don't need to do that. Okay. Now, in the middle of the, on page 65, this psalm, and that's 89, this psalm shows clearly what constituted the hope of David was God's promise regarding his house and his throne. And his throne was a seat of authority. And ultimately, it was Jesus who sat upon that seat of authority. So, Jesus was the one in whom that promise ultimately, the promise to David ultimately was fulfilled. All right? All right, another thing. All of this is related so much. Now then, we'll go to another psalm. Go to Psalm 16. Now, Peter quotes from Psalm 16 as well. So, let's go to Psalm 16. Psalm 16, and this was written by David. All right, Psalm 16, one of the best known psalms. Okay. All right. I need somebody to read for me again. All right. You want to read for me? All right. Read Psalm 16. Greg Piconia. Thank you. I'm turning to Acts 2 because this is quoted in Acts 2. Peter quotes from this in Acts 2. And he makes a very notable comment in that sermon in Acts 2 with regard to this. All right, so all right, in verse 22, "You men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God unto you by mighty works and wonders and signs which God did by him in the midst of you, even as ye yourselves know, him being delivered up by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, you be by the hands of lawless men did crucify and slay, whom God raised up, having loosed the pangs of death." And this is a marvelous thing, because it was not possible. You think, oh, the devil really had a hold of him. No, it was not possible. It was not possible that he should not be raised. It was not possible that he should be holden of it. "For David saith concerning him, I beheld the Lord always before my face, for he is on my right hand, that I should not be moved. Therefore my heart was glad and my tongue rejoiced." Now, to an extent, this would refer to David a little bit, but go on as we think about that. "Moreover, my flesh shall also dwell in hope, because you will not leave my soul in Hades or under Hades, neither will you give your Holy One to see corruption." Did David decay? Look at what Peter said. "Brethren, I may say unto you freely of the patriarch David, that he both died and was buried, and his tomb is with us unto this day." How does that prove then that this is not a reference to Jesus? That it is a reference to Jesus. Because when Jesus died, did he decay? No. He was raised from the dead before there was time for him to decay. This psalm is a marvelous psalm. So, do you see how much all of this is tied together and related? All of it. So, it's just a joy to think about, isn't it? Okay. All right, so I think we'll go ahead and stop there. So if you're going to ring the bell, have at it.